Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the latest episode of the Peter B. Collins Show. My thanks to great and generous listeners, including Cameron Troxell, Kathleen Emmer, John Zweibel in Hawaii, and a new subscriber, Faith Peoples. Thank you, Faith. We could use a few more new ones, so if you haven't made the leap, and I'm not taking your unemployment check, I invite you to support the program. Go to peterbcollins.com. The links are on the right-hand side of the homepage, and our voluntary subscriptions start as low as $5 a month. Today's podcast is the latest episode in the Boiling Frogs interview series, co-hosted with Sibel Edmonds. And your humble host wants to note that this podcast will require a little work on your part. Our guest, Dr. Aland Mizell, has an accent, and he was connecting up with us via Skype from the Philippines. So, some passages may be a little bit hard to understand. Some references to Turkish politics might seem a little foreign to you. But if you go to peterbcollins.com, we'll link you to Dr. Mizell's website, and you can read some of his articles. He is an international expert on Turkey, and in particular, its long-persecuted Kurdish minority. And you're going to hear the remarkable developments in the story of Fethullah Gulen, a Turkish exile living in the United States who says he is personally not wealthy, but he has control of quite an empire that includes media and charter schools here in the United States. And many of these charter schools don't acknowledge their connections to Gulen while they promote Turkish subjects, and they bring in Turkish teachers who apparently aren't very well trained. So it's a fascinating story, and I hope that you will have the patience to listen carefully, maybe in several sittings, to get the gist of what Dr. Mizell has to tell us. And thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Welcome to Boiling Frogs.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor. Get rich, that's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. But today, NSA's illegal domestic wiretapping, FBI's national security letters, state secrets privilege, TSA's 1 million plus no-fly list, persecution of government whistleblowers, perpetual wars, rendition and torture. Can you feel the water boiling?
Welcome to the Boiling Frogs. With Sibel Edmonds, I'm Peter B. Collins. Our guest today is Dr. Aland Mizell, and he has a fascinating background. He's the founder of Minority Care International, a non-governmental organization with the mission of assisting deprived minorities. He serves as president and CEO of that organization, which works in the southern Philippines. And he joins us today by Skype from the Philippines and the island of Mindanao. Dr. Mizell, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
It's great to talk with you. And your studies have focused on the issues of the Kurdish minority in Turkey and Iraq. You studied as an intern at the International Foundation for Election Systems, as a researcher and a Russian translator to study emerging democracies in the Third World. And you write frequently as a contributor to Kurdish media, and I've had a chance to catch up on some of your writing. I want to thank you for joining us here today because we want to explore issues related to a man named Fethullah Gulen, G-U-L-E-N. And I want to give our listeners some biographical information about Gulen. I have a Wikipedia bio, and as I go through this, Dr. Mizell, if you would be kind enough to comment, including correcting any inaccuracies, I think that would help our listeners understand who this man is. Now, it's interesting that we are recording this conversation on the 26th of April, and tomorrow is his 70th birthday. He was born in Turkey, the son of an imam, and reportedly began preaching at the age of 14. And he traveled around Turkey and then started to build a kind of a movement starting in the 1980s. And he participated in the founding of the Journalists and Writers Foundation and was given the title of honorary president by that foundation. And there are other issues related to his history with the Turkish government that we'll probably cover in a bit. Now, in 1998, he emigrated to the United States, and he currently lives in Pennsylvania. We are told that he came here due to health problems. He suffers from diabetes. He is reportedly a bachelor with no children that we are aware of. And he has been tried in absentia in Turkey for comments that he made that were broadcast on television there related to the secular government there and his apparent desire for it to become a fully Islamic state. So could you help us understand where he is on the spectrum of the secularists in Turkey as well as the religious groups who are fairly well separated for the government, at least historically that was the case?
Well, Gulen, actually, it's correct, those, you know, the information you provide. But Gulen has really start, you know, early 60s in his movement. And of course, when he started, it was supposed to be non-political project in Turkey. So, and the modernist Islamic thinker Bediüzzaman Said Nursi, that's what they call, actually, he's a Kurdi, what I call Bediüzzaman Said Kurdi. And maybe you have read some of my article related to that person as well. And the founder of the Nurcu Sek influenced the Fethullah Gulen. Said Nursi, actually, Fethullah Gulen, most of his teaching influenced by the Said Nursi. Whatever he does, actually, most of the what you will find the Said Nursi's books. So, and of course, you know, 10 years, well, to early 80s and 90s and up to maybe 2001, before Gulen 99, before Gulen exiled to U.S., and it was in Turkey, Islam was, you know, it's considered like illegal. I mean, can you imagine during the 80s, and they start, it was reading Said Nursi's book was illegal. And so, of course, what you're going to do? You're going to be very secretive at this point. So what they did is they actually pretend to be secular, okay? They pretend to be secular, but... And of course, and then start to recruit the people. And the first thing is when they recruit the students, young students, and they will teach them first secrecy, how to keep a secret. You will find most of us he's teaching. They will indoctrinate to secrecy, secrecy, secrecy, secrecy, secrecy. So, and therefore, is, and then of course, the first the Gulen did was infiltrate the highest position like police academy, military, and the institution that Gulen was so hesitant, afraid of. And so today in Turkey, the Gulen actually got almost all his follower now is head of some police, police there and police chief and so on. So of course, one of the things that Gulen is good at it is that have to get the information. And so when he get information, of course, based on this information, he make his decision. So the follower believe that he's wise. He's a chosen by God. God revealed to him, and that's why they believe in him. So
now I understand that Gulen has published more than 60 books. Are any of them significant, or the kinds of books that take on greater weight than just being published? Do they have religious or political value that would not be necessarily obvious to a Westerner?
Well, Peter, I mean, if you go ahead, I mean, if someone who's really seriously want to study Gulen, you will see the parallel between like Muhammad's life and Gulen's. And Gulen actually, it's the way how he does, the way people believe is that he mixed two things. Of course, one is nationalism, okay? Islamic Turkification of Islam, basically, because Gulen is in love with the Ottoman Empire. Okay, he is a nostalgic about the heyday of Ottoman Empire. When he mentioned the Ottoman Empire, he said golden generation. He believed that Ottoman Empire never committed a mistake. He says you will never find the few people got unhappy with the Ottoman Empire. And of course, and then when you look at the Western historians, they will have a different point of view of Ottoman Empire. So when you look at it, Gulen and the parallel, you have to look at the way how Islam began. Islam began with the 6th century, and it did not start with the when Muhammad started, didn't say, okay, you are, wrong. What he did is actually he started with the secrecy. And he started with the few men that who are very young and who could, join his. And then when he got the power, and then he says, okay, now you have enough power, then you can reveal it as the same thing. And Gulen actually, that's what one of my articles I say, from Mecca to Medina. When he was exiled from Mecca to Medina, he did not have enough power. So the Meccan in that time, non-Muslims, they see him as a threat, so they him exiled to Medina. So same thing with Turkey. And 1993, and in Central Asia, they call Hijrat. After the Soviet Union collapsed, they call Hijrat, which is Gulen say the parallel. It says you are the Sahaba, which a follower the Muhammad, and then Gulen's follower also consider themselves Sahaba because they went to Central Asia to spread the Islam. So
before we get to Central Asia, because Peter mentioned 60 books, and also he has been now known as a scholar. Can you please tell us about this guy's education? Because as far as I know, and as far as I have confirmed, this guy basically didn't even finish elementary school. So you're looking at a barely literate guy, and how this guy is being considered a scholar and writes 60 books. Now, isn't that a contradiction? How is it happening?
Correct. I mean, he did not finish the formal school, formal education. But what he did, as I said, he really studied this Risale-i-Nur, which is Said Nursi, because he influenced by the Said Nursis. And every teaching what he does now, you will see all of them in Risale-i-Nur. But what they are good at it, the first, they will teach Risale, and then slowly they will indoctrinate you to Gulen. So they will put the Said Nursi back, and then they will everything give a credit to the Gulen. So they actually like a worshiper. I mean, it's a dangerous. People consider them like, I've talked to some of the students. They say, oh, we see Gulen in my dream, and that means I saw Muhammad like my dream. So they are really, really worship this guy. So, I mean, he is a smart. I'm not saying he is a smart guy. I mean, he is a very smart and he's a very intelligent. But that doesn't make him a right. I mean, you know, that doesn't make him a right. And but you will find lots of his abortions too. The one of the mind-boggling I see is those academic, you know. And they never discuss how Gulen even doesn't believe in science. And when I say science, means like, say science doesn't, you know, well, all his, when you look at his school, they say, well, science and religion compatible. That's all PR, it's all marketing. But actually, when you look at it, Gulen is anti all those science and so on. So he's more pseudoscience, that's what I was called.
And the schools, the charter schools that he and his followers are building here in the United States often focus on science and math, at least as a marketing position. Later on in this podcast, you will hear the voice of a parent of a child who attended a Gulen charter school in Arizona. And the emphasis was supposed to be on science, and his experience was that the academics did not match the marketing. But Dr. Mizell, tell us a little bit about Gulen personally. He, on his website, and if people want to go to it, guleninstitute.org, he has a very lengthy and rambling biography, but in it he claims that he is a man who owns nothing and who is a leader of no one. And so he postures as a, not quite a monk, but as a remote figure who does not seek the limelight, does not seek to become a leader, and has not sought wealth. Yet he controls an empire through foundations that include newspapers and other media outlets. And as we've mentioned, he is leading an effort to build hundreds of charter schools here in the United States.
Right. I mean, again, what did founder of Islam, Muhammad, own anything? Did he own? Did he literally have any under anything under his name? But he was the actually founder of Islam, right? So Gulen, it is true, there is officially nothing registered under his name. But Gulen is the sole control of all those ideas. And Gulen has a monthly meeting with they divided the world and continent. They have all their imams. So he has a meeting. And his meetings are conducted in Pennsylvania, United States. So, and actually, it's one of the famous, this is, he's, you know, he says, again, he's, you know, secrecy. He says, you must move in the artillery of system without anyone noticing your existence until you reach all the power and centers. Of course, today Gulen say, well, if he say, well, my intention is this, and my intention, you know, then what is going to happen? I mean, he is not. So what he does is Gulen want to create alternative. So West, especially United States, see Gulen blindly, see Gulen as an alternative to the Al-Qaeda, alternative to the all other, like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, all other fundamental, and then they see Gulen as a peace, as a tolerance, as a contributor to humanity. And so they see, wow, this guy is, it is everything. It's a good package, it's a good PR. So, but when you really look at it, and I don't understand why can't they read this until the conditions are ripe, the follower must continue to like this. If they do something prematurely, the world will crush our head and Muslims will suffer everywhere. Like in tragedy, he give example, Algeria, Syria, and it's going to be disaster like in Egypt. So, and what Gulen look for is the time is right. And you must wait, okay, for the time when you are complete and conditions are ripe. So, I mean, you know, when you look at his teaching. And I mean, I really don't understand why people can't understand this. You know, how this guy has an agenda. This guy has an agenda. The agenda is try to, you know, try to conquer the world. And Islam, it says called Darul Harb and Darul Islam, okay?
Right. Either his network is valued as more than $25 billion. And Dr. Mizell, you said that in U.S. they view him as this, but not everyone, because as you and I know, as many people in Turkey know, CIA and the State Department, they do not view him as an alternative Al-Qaeda or alternative to some other extremist bodies and movements all over that region. In fact, it was the CIA and CIA support that got him various positions in various Central Asian countries, in the Balkans. I mean, we are talking about more than 300 madrasas all over that region, and a lot of these during the 90s were supported by the CIA. In fact, the State Department and CIA, they were obtaining fake teacher visa for CIA operatives to be positioned in some of these schools in Central Asia to supposedly teach English while they were working with some of the ex-Mujahideen groups that they were funneling to during the conflict in Kosovo and other places, and to counter the Soviets' influence in Central Asian countries, considering the resources there. So not everyone have been viewing Gulen as this, he's an alternate. In fact, the other people within the CIA and the State Department have been using his Islamic movement, and in fact with joint operations, to actually get the control of certain areas with certain resources-rich areas there.
Well, I mean, you know, That's why the Americans are doing a mistake, in my view. Like, for example, you all know this because you are inside, actually, you know, more than in terms of those, the profiles. And like 79, and in 1979, what did United States did in Afghanistan? They actually support the Mujahideen and against the Russia. So little devil versus biggest devil. So they used the little devil in that time against Russia. So so Mujahideen did counter the Russia and kick the Russia out of the Afghanistan and so on. So against the Soviet Union. So in Central Asia, and not when, you know, in 1989, when after the Soviet Union collapsed, and that's why Gulen went there. Of course, in that was the balance of power, is it was shifting, and so that was a vacuum in Central Asia. So the all Wahhabism from Saudi Arabia and Iran, and of course Turkey. So the biggest competitor in Central Asia, and there are two religions: one Shia, which is America is not very good friend with it, and then Sunni, which is Muslim. So and then, America look at it, which one is a good, which one is a little bit, they think it's a good interest for the U.S. in the region. So they support, it's true, I do agree, they did support Gulen movement in Central Asia, because they didn't want Shia, Iran, to be influenced in Central Asia. So, but... You know, I read some of the article has been written, and like Gulen has 130 CIA agents and working their schools. But I have also, like in 1994 and 1995, Gulen school in Uzbekistan and had a problem. And Gulen, Uzbek government, and tried to shut down the Uzbek schools. I mean, Gulen's Gulen school in Uzbekistan. And during the summer of 1994, and half of Gulen's teachers went back to Turkey for summer vacation. When they went back to Turkey, and 200 plus they could not come back because Uzbek government did not let them come back to Uzbekistan. So that was like more than 19 schools in Uzbekistan, they start to shut down. So, and there was the half of the teachers and balletmen, like, you know, so they were staying in Uzbekistan, they could not go back to Turkey. And, you know, you early mentioned about the bribery and about all those things, that's correct. And Gulen did everything to Uzbek government to let those teachers come back and to not close down the schools. Because Gulen also well known that if the school being closed, then it will spread other Central Asian country and hopefully all over the world. So they will have negative impact. So they try to make as much as possible to, you know, not to make all those. And one of the things is that the rumors, one of the insider, it says there was a Gulen, there was a guy who were Gulen's top guy, and he was in charge of school in Central Uzbekistan. He's the one actually working for CIA and give all those list of the teachers, and that they are fundamental, they have a secret agenda, and not them let them to stay there. So they actually, and one of the guys told me that they actually sent this guy very urgently to the back to Turkey. So I don't know what happened to that guy. But this was the happened in 1994 and 1995. So that sometimes people says, well, is Gulen working for CIA? I'm not sure Gulen working for CIA. But I do believe that Gulen, yes, does have a connection with the CIA. And U.S. openly support Gulen, and they openly support Turkey in the region because Turkey has historical and even some kinship relation with the Central Asia. So they use Turkey to be able to be successful in that. But in a long term, is this a good? I don't think so. I think it's in long term, and Turkey is going to be a threat to American interests in the Middle East as well as in Central Asia.
Dr. Mizell, I've been following the actions and interests of Dr. Seung Myung Moon of Korea for more than 30 years now. And as you describe Fethullah Gulen, there are some stunning similarities. Moon, we have no indication that he ever worked for the American CIA, but his number two guy, Bo Hee Pak, was a top individual, a top leader in the Korean Central Intelligence Agency. And when Moon came to this country, he first came to the defense of President Richard Nixon. And in exchange, the Nixon administration and succeeding governments gave Moon a great deal of power and influence. Then he bought the Washington Times newspaper and became a mouthpiece for the conservative and then the neoconservative movements in the United States. Reverend Moon operates internationally, and he launders money back and forth between his various entities in different countries. He now controls the seafood distribution in the eastern part of the United States, which probably doesn't have much to do with his other interests except to generate money and to launder funds that he moves around the world. And also, Reverend Moon, in addition to being involved in communications, has worked to develop universities. And very much like Gulen, he has articulated an interfaith approach to religion to try to recruit and attract people from all different faith backgrounds. So those are just some of the similarities. Do you see parallels between the interests and activities of Moon and Gulen?
There are some activity. I mean, there are some parallel, but the Gulen is really what they want. They really call Darul Harb and Darul Islam. Gulen is, and Darul Islam is, according to Islam, that you have to, the Islam should be control all, every aspect of life. And so until then, you are in Darul Harb, you are at war, okay? So another way to say is that is Sharia law, I mean, Islamic law, because When you say Sharia law, I mean, when you say jihad, is people think it's like Al-Qaeda, just go fight. No, jihad is, there are many ways to, you know, they conduct jihad. That's why they, Gulen and his followers see themselves. So, but again, Gulen is like a Machiavelli, the prince, and he wants, he says, the end justifies the mean. You look at the result. It doesn't matter how you get that result. As long as you have, as long as you be successful, before you become a successful, it is necessary to do little devil things. So when you accomplish your goal, then those great things, accomplishment, will pay back to those little devils. So it's worth to do little evil things. So and Gulen, that's why they are doing in the States. That's what they did in Turkey. And Gulen is a very precautious, and he knows how to act, when to act, and so on. So Gulen is a really, he's one of his idol is Ottoman Empire, and he won't bring back Ottoman Empire. So the question is, what kind of system Ottoman Empire used? What kind of system Ottoman Empire had? Of course, it was a Sharia law. It was Khalifa. It was a total control. So that, and that's why this is, you will see all Gulen's speech. You will see all his writing. He called it Golden Generation. And oftentimes, when Gulen compare his follower to Ottoman, that Golden Generation, he always compare his follower to Muhammad's Sahaba followers. So that's why his followers, very loyal. They will give their life to what Gulen says. And for me, it's a cult. And Islam, according to real Islam, actually worship man is a forbidden. I mean, it's a forbidden. But of course, the success of Gulen is they don't tell the truth, okay? That they justify the lie. They say lie is okay. And according to Gulen, it says, you have to know the truth, but you cannot tell the truth anywhere, everywhere, to anyone. So it's okay sometimes you can lie, if justify your purpose. So when you say those, you will hear, Gulen will say, well, I don't have any connection. I don't have with the schools. I don't know what the school. And that is just baloney. That's just a lie. I mean, and they did in Central Asia too.
Dr. Mizell, Peter mentioned the neocon support for the Moon cult and Reverend Moon. Well, we actually see the similar kind of a support, in fact, even maybe stronger, both by Israel and the neocons here for Gulen. I tell you, one of his biggest supporters happened to be Mort Abramovitz, okay? And then we have people like Graham Fuller. So why is it that we see such a strong support and backing of Israelis when it comes to Gulen, and why we see this high-level Israeli neocons such as Mark Grossman and Mort Abramowitz and Graham Fuller when it comes to Gulen? What is the commonality there? Why such support?
Right. Actually, that's a very good question, Sibel, because actually, in my view, the first that Gulen that really introduced to the U.S. as a Jewish community, and 1996 and 1997, and Jewish leaders, represented from Anti-Defamation League, and whom Gulen met at least twice, one in the United States, once in Turkey, and the first meeting between Gulen and League took place in New Jersey. And attended by the president of Anti-Defamation League, Abraham Foxman, and Kenneth Jacobson, who was the national deputy director of League as well as deputy director of Foreign Affairs. So, and then also those League came back to Turkey too. So, and so they found, they see this as Gulen as a new and promote, education and so on. So, and in Turkey, of course, in that time, Gulen start like those journal and writer foundations and interfaith dialogues. And he met first time 1996 the Greek patriarch and Armenians and Syrian patriarch and so on. So that's why those guys came to Turkey. And of course, Gulen had another guy and as a Isaac Alaton. I don't know, have you heard of that? And he's a Jewish
and
he's a Turkish.
Actually, I have a question from a Turkish reporter who doesn't want to be identified, and he supports your work. And his question has to do with the connection between Gulen and Isaac Alaton and the fact that both of them are also funded by George Soros, which is very interesting.
Right. Well, that's why Alaton actually he has a very he's a supporter of Gulen, and he actually he's the one when Gulen had a problem in Turkmenistan, because Alaton he's the owner, CEO of Alarko company in Turkey. He's very successfully involved the energy and construction and so on. So when he was at Gulen School in Turkmenistan, when he had a problem in Turkmenistan, actually Isaac Alakon, he had a connection with the president, and he built the airport in there. So he helped actually solve that problem. Another time that Isaac Alakon really personally helped Gulen was in Russia. So when Gulen, when Russian government, and they found the connection between Gulen and CIA, and they start to close the school there. So what Gulen did, and he sent Isaac Alaton, because Isaac Alaton, hey, this is guy Jewish, and he is basically saying, Gulen is okay. And then the third one, actually, when you mentioned the former ambassador, Abramovitz, and he actually, when he had a problem in this with the, when the U.S. government and tried to, Homeland Security tried to deport him, and they again, there's Ekrem Dumanlı, the editor Zaman News, the editor of Zaman newspaper, and he and another guy, spokesperson in Turkey, tried to contact Isaac Alaton and to ask for help from him to not let U.S. government to deport him. And that's why the former ambassador actually got involved. And of course, and then some other ex-CIA, that's one you mentioned, and Fuller and some others, to say this guy is okay, this guy is not threat to U.S. security, so and let him stay. And that's how a really connection. My belief is that the Jewish actually is the one connect them outside. And this Isaac Alaton is a really biggest contributor to Gulen, and he does and continue until now as support Gulen. Another person which was actually secretly associate now is no longer secret because it's a public, is a former president of. And president and prime minister of Turkey and Turgut Özal, and Turgut Özal was Gulen follower, and when 1992-91, and when Uzbek government in 93 Uzbek government, and had a problem in all Central Asia to close down Gulen schools. So what Gulen did secretly in that time, Gulen was not very popular. And not many in Turkey know about Gulen, because they thought, oh, no, it's another like a Nur movement sect. So what he did, he sent Özal to Central Asia. 12th day, Özal went all the schools, all the country in the Central Asia to visit his school to tell him the government's head that this is not threat. Those are the future bridge, building bridge between Central Asian countries and Turkey. And as you know that in that time, Central Asian government, they really respect Özal personally. So Gulen in that time, that's how actually also that Özal and the connection with Özal and Ishak Alatoğan and even the United States. That's how. So my point is, Gülen Nur have to use the people. Gülen Nur have to buy the people when it doesn't matter whether CIA, whether mafia, whether money laundering, whether criminal. It doesn't matter. As long as you help them, as long as you advance their movement, they will use you. It doesn't matter what you do. And Gülen also know this. Gülen is a very secretive. He doesn't trust anyone as well. So, and of course, conspiracy. When you say all those things, they say, oh, well, he's a conspirator. And he's a conspiracy. Don't believe it. And he's working for this. He's that. And that's why, and in Turks generally, I mean, Sibel, you know this, and generally they believe all those conspiracy theory, you know. They think all over the world against Turks, and they don't want Turkey to become a greater power in the Middle East. So they believe, well, they easily buy all those conspiracy theories.
And Dr. Mizell, to follow up on Sibel's point a moment ago, why would George Soros provide funding for the activities of Fethullah Gulen?
In my view, because, I mean, George Soros is, because if you look at it, because they believe, okay, they believe education is good because, you know, that he advocated education and helped the people. And so it's a good cause. And compared to like other versions of Islam, like Shia, Wahhabism, and so on. So, and that's why George Soros does. I mean, George Soros is not a very good guy, but that's how he does. That's how he helped. And why Gülen accept the help from him? And again, Gülen, as long as you help Gülen, as long as you advance Gülen's movement, and so on. Does Gülen really like George Soros? No. I mean, in Central Asia, I've seen it in Central Asia, because George Soros very, very active in Central Asia. And when I talk to all those Gulen's followers, and they all says, oh, you know, they have different perspective on George Soros. They don't like George Soros. I mean, but, you know, Gülen, not just George Soros. Why would the Walmart support the Gülen? Why would the owner of Microsoft, Bill Gates, why he will support Gülen? Why would the U.S. government support Gülen? I mean, that's all. It's the same reason. Somehow, either for they want you know, for long term for their interest, and they ignore the for short term. I mean, short term for their interest, they ignore the long term. So I don't know. Are they for me in a long term? They miscalculated, and so I. In the future, I think, again, in the Middle East, and Iran is not the biggest threat. Iran is now considered to be a big threat, but the world is changing. Iran will change, and Turkey is going to be the one and be the really threat to, you know, American interest in Middle East. And that's my view. And slowly you can see that. Turkey will say, I am here, and without me, you can't do this. And that's why... And this government, which is supported by Gülen, and most of Gülen's followers on this, is the AKP party, Erdogan. And you can see them actually in like involvement in Syria and Iran and zero policy with their foreign, you know, foreign neighbors. I mean, you know, so it's a, but same, yeah, that why they support it. And it's the same reason. They probably think because of, you know, he's advocating good cause, and it's a good for humanity, and he's a saver of the world, and
Dr.
so on.
Mizell, and, usually, especially with some of these people, when we are talking about, you know, Abramowitz and the neocons such as Graham Fuller, and we are looking at people like Esposito, and when we are talking about CIA, you usually look at mutual interest. It's never that altruistic saying, oh, you know what, this person is doing such good job, and it's such a moderate, and it's an alternative, so we're going to go ahead and put our support, and whether it's financial or the other types of support, let's say the what CIA provided and has been providing Gülen, it usually boils down to mutual interest, and I think that's what Peter was trying to get at, is usually mutual interest, and what can be the mutual interest between Gulen and Israel lobby and neocons such as Abramowitz. And with CIA, you're absolutely right. I absolutely understand, and I know, based on what I know from the FBI, that we had those operations. We still have some of those operations in Central Asia and in the Balkans, and they did have joint operations and mutual interests with Gulen and Gulen's network. But when it comes to the Israel lobby and Israel, that's the part that gets a little bit murky, and we were trying to get a better sense, understanding of what can be the mutual interest between Israel and Fethullah Gulen. And I know they don't do anything altruistically. I haven't seen them doing anything altruistically.
Sibel, again, go back to the history of Islam. When Muhammad before Islamic State set up in Medina, Muhammad did a peace agreement with the Jewish people, because Jews were controlled, Jews were powerful, and they were powerful. They controlled all those businesses and so on. So Muhammad says no war with the Jewish people. Even that time, they will pray toward Jerusalem. So after Muhammad become a powerful, so they changed to the Qibla, to the Mecca. So when set up the Islamic State, and the things changed when they got the power, and the old perception is changed. So I agree, there is a mutual interest, and that's why Gulen look for the time, and even when there's Marmara Flotilla, the crisis, even Gulen went against the AKP. He says, no, Turkish government should ask permission before send this ship to there.
That's the Mavi Marmara that was sent to Gaza and interdicted by the Israeli Navy in international waters, where they boarded the ships and 9 people died, mostly Turks. One was a young man who was a dual citizen of Turkey and the United States, and that occurred last May 30th in that part of the world.
Correct. So Gulen went and says, well, you know, Israel has a right to defend, and Turkish government should have, you know, asked permission. So that was actually, I mean, why did Gulen make that statement, you know? So why? Because Gulen has so many connection with the, you know, Jewish people. He didn't want to hurt his Jewish friend, and he's a guy, and he always, you know, say the right thing, right time, and that's why people believe that. And so, but again, in the past, if you go look at it again, look at Gulen's teaching, reading. Does Gulen call devil triangle? You know, you will find lots of us in his speech. You will find, you know, he speak anti-Israel, he speaks anti-U.S., and so on. So, and today he has a good marketing tool, as Sibel mentioned, about media, you know, newspaper, and not only that, now is academic in the United States, and of course the charter schools, businesses, and all you name it.
Let's talk about the U.S. operations next, Dr. Mizell. I took a look at the tax returns of a couple of nonprofit organizations linked to Gulen. One is called the Rumi Foundation, which has an operating address outside Cleveland, Highland Heights, Ohio. And their reported income to the U.S. government in 2009 was only $53,000. Then there is the Niagara Foundation, with an office on Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago, and that appears to be one of his focal points. But they, too, report only $87,000 in contributions, gifts, grants, and other income in tax year 2009. So I know I could dig further, but where is the central organizing foundation or other entity that Gulen operates through and uses it to incubate the charter schools that now number more than 120 in the United States?
Well, the central operation, center mind is Gulen himself. So, and they have those, you know, Gulen, and they have all those meetings, individual contributors, and so on. So as businesses, because one of the Gulen, the way it works, whenever they go, they not just open the school, they also open the businesses. When they go to, let's, for example, they come to Texas, right? They open up, let's say, Cosmos Foundation, okay? So when they start the Cosmos Foundation, first of all, they found someone in Turkey, let's say Istanbul. They match with the, like, call the sister, so that Istanbul will support Texas states. Any, whatever they, like Istanbul, let's say businessmen, they have, of course, their organization there. They will hook up with the, let's say, Texas. And I think Texas, Antalya city, looking at supporting Texas, I think I may be wrong, but my understanding, Antalya is supporting Texas. But anyway, so what they will do is, until the businesses, because since business started at the beginning, so they will not make profit. When business become a self-sustained, so slowly, then in Istanbul will cut the support. So what they do is, then business in the state will start to fund the schools and any expenses. And so that's how it works. And then Gulen start with the businesses. And then wherever they go, they also open up the branch for Zaman newspaper, media. So, and that's how it, their fund runs. And then, of course, teachers. They bring the teachers. Teachers, sometimes they don't get paid. You know, what they do is they contribute it. They contribute back. They believe in Hizmet. They believe they are a jihad. They are a sahaba. And so it's okay. You know, have little money and survive and so on. But in the United States, they got the jackpot, you know, because it's a different. They got jackpot because they get the loan grants and from the government, and they loophole and charter schools. That's a perfect.
I have to add this here, because these teachers that they are bringing from Turkey, while there are so many jobless teachers are here in the U.S., they actually get much higher salaries than even the American teachers. Let's say if an American math teacher with that level of experience gets $32,000, they give $48,000 to these Turkish teachers. And what people don't know is, this is the taxpayer money. This is the U.S. taxpayer money. Then these teachers, they get that money. Maybe they take 25-30% of it, then the rest of it goes to Gulen's laundering organizations, whether they are in Turkey, maybe they send the income to Turkey, whether it's some of his so-called nonprofits. So actually that money that they show in the books going to the teachers, the Turkish teachers they brought, actually goes into the pockets of the Gulen and Gulen's organization. And that's one of the ways they are laundering this money, which is one of the many ways they use to launder money.
Right. I agree. That's as I said, they got jackpot because they know how to use the system in the U.S. So instead of give the free, why is it in Central Asia, like in the elite school, like in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, all Central Asia, school are free, tuition. Why in the United States they charge it? Because they know you have got money and a loophole. So what they do, you are right. I mean, like, for example, they when they got the money, they support other organizations like Cambodia School, Zaman International School in Cambodia and Thailand and some other part. So, yeah, now even Diyarbakir, you know, like even U.S., they send like doctors and some of the NGO in the U.S., supporting back in some of the city in Turkey too, because they got more money in here, so they're rich and so I agree, because they know how to get into the system. And actually, you know, the Obama's actually the one is Obama raised to top education to top policy, and it's a good design for Gulen. It's a perfect for Gulen, And that's why they are being very successful in the U.S. And when I start actually writing about this, not many people like, you know, it's like, who is this guy? And one time I was in Dallas, attend one of their, Rumi, Whirling Dervish, okay? And they had this theater in Dallas. And I was curious. I just went with one of my friends, and then you will see all those Americans dress up. They like go to symphony orchestra, and you know, they thought like they're going this. And this whirling dervish came, and they did dance, and then and they start to pray. And I had my next to me, there was a guy, and he was from Pakistan. He says, Allahu Akbar, you know, and then they recited, like, because for them it was a great thing, and they recited basically, you know, their culture and Islamic tradition. The American was like, oh, this is very interesting and something different, you know, appealing them, something different is good. And so, but now it's become alarming. Some of the Americans are finally realizing that, you know, it's not really as peaceful as what they are. And another thing is, one of the, my friend told me, and you know, it's a, that they invite imam to come to school and talk about Islam. And that's one, another thing is like Fulbright scholar. I mean, Fulbright is supposed to be one of the very good, you know, the scholar and, you know, to promote American interest overseas and bring the scholar exchange and ideas and so on. And so now what it does is a Fulbright scholar is bringing the Muslims from, if you want to teach Islam in the U.S., they will bring you. I mean, as long as you want to teach and promote Islam, I mean, as long as you want to do that, they will bring it. So who get the benefit? Because Gulen has alternative. He already set those seed schools, and most of those his followers apply it, and they get, and then they get the grant, and they come. So why not? Free ticket and free money to do your research and look at it. And Gulen, I mean, Sibel, you mentioned earlier about how they are savvy about the internet, about the technology, and about the academic, and so on. So, and the next step is going to be is make sure that Gulen get Nobel Prize. So it's going to come soon. You will see. Now, once they got that, that's it.
Dr. Mizell, in one of the articles that you published, you described these charter schools. And in 2009, there were more than 90, and that number has climbed. There are attempts being made all over the country to develop new charter schools linked to and controlled by the Gulen Group. And just as an example, there are schools in Arizona, in Tucson, in Phoenix. They're all called Sonoran Science Academies. And it just strikes me as odd that the state of Arizona is arguably the most xenophobic in the United States. They've passed the legislation that allows them to check the documents of people who are thought to be non-citizens. And so how is it that these schools that have Turkish teachers that teach in the Turkish or teach the Turkish language and teach Turkish history reward students with free trips to Turkey? How can this clearly non-American school system take root in a state that is so virulent about non-American people who were present there? It really seems contradictory.
Well, it is contradictory because that's how they work. They did this system in Central Asia. So wherever they go, they adjust the culture. In Central Asia, they did not take a free trip, not all like businessmen, but they did give a free trip to, like, let's say, head of the state and so on, and especially students. They will take top 10 students who are the best. They will give them free trip to Turkey. The reason they do that, because it's a free PR for them, you know, the best promotion for them, because it is a different, let's say, one of Gulen follower, Muhammad Chetin, who's a former president of Interfaith Dialogue in Texas. Let's say this guy come to United States, nobody knows, I come to talk about Gulen versus John Esposito to talk about Gulen. That is a huge difference, right? Because John Esposito, you know, I mean, there are some people know about it and about John Esposito, and he's American, he's a Western, and he's a claim to be Catholic or so on and so on. So that's a different. And versus Bill Clinton, come say Gulen is he promote interfaith dialogue, and he's good, and so on. So there is huge difference. The point, so when someone go against it, they says, ha-ha, you are wrong. If we are a fundamental, if we are like a threat, then why those people say to us, you know, so they bring those people to scene, they says, look, we are not threat. If you are threat, those people are safe. So when they take a trip to Turkey, where do they take them? Where do they take them? The question is, where do they take them? They take their, in Turkey, what they have, okay? For 1 week or more than, let's say, 2 weeks trip. So 1 week or 2 weeks, what can you learn? You know, what can you learn? And then they come back, they say, oh, Turkey, it's beautiful. Those people are so good. And then Gulen give a conferences in the States. And listen, I just laugh. I mean, is it crazy? He says, I went there. I just talked to students and it was this. They promote peace, interfaith dialogue and tolerant. And they are not like, they are different than other Muslims and so on. I mean, but if you really listen to, let's say, Hanafi Avdi, who was a former police chief, now he's in jail. Another guy who's one of the, like, actually, Nurettin Veren, he was 30 years, who's a good friend with the Gulen, and he was actually the one started this movement with the Gulen. And what he did is somehow he object Gulen view. Gulen, they excommunicate him. This guy lost his family. They distort him. They made him like has a sexual affairs with some women and so on. So they slander this guy. And I don't know whether those other are true or not, but in media, this guy is disgrace this guy and make him not credible. And same thing with Hanafi Avcı. When Hanafi Avcı, you know, publish a book that Gulen movements are everywhere, because in some point, actually, Gulen used Hanafi Avcı, put all his students, police students, to top. So when Hanafi Avcı saw some of their method, not illegal, he spoke against it, they put him. So what they did, they slander Hanafi Avcı. Now he's under the Ergenekon and to like a terror organization in Turkey, and he's in jail. And then, and some other books as well, like the latest one is like 17 journalists. And again, wrote the book, it's called İmamın Ordusu, you know, the, so, and this guy also, they put him jail. Not only they put him jail, they also, they didn't let them distribute these books. So,
this is a cult. It's a very powerful, dangerous cult. And to me, I know other people may, you know, view him differently. I see him as a very successful charlatan, snake oil salesman. Dr. Mizell, I have three quick questions for you with short answers that I got from some of our followers in Turkey. And I don't know the answers to some of them. That's why I'm asking you. There may be nothing. Some of them may be based on rumor. But one question from one of our Turkish followers is, was Gulen working during 80s for Radio Free Europe?
I don't know about that, but I do know that wherever the Gulen goes, it says you take with one thing. First priority, you spread the Islam. So one of the things they see, the reason, because in Islam, actually, worshiping a man or idol is forbidden. In Islam, that's forbid that. But they think because, you know, and Gulen is alive, so he's teaching, they believe, is really equal to what Quran teaches. So therefore, they try to disseminate his teaching. So, and that's why, like, I was in Central Europe, and I was in the Czech Republic. And some of his followers came to me and tried to recruit me. And one of the things they were saying, like, they start to talk about, they thought I have no clue about the Gulen movement. So they start to talk to me. They start talk to me. They were treating me. They, you know, come to my place and they will bring the, you know, all those food and so on. And one time I had this guy who was in charge of that, you know, city, and 2 hours, I mean, 4 hours of talking about the movement. And one of the things he was says, oh, when you go back to states, why don't you involve the politics? Why don't you run for senator? Why don't do this. You know, we need you. And then the final question he asked me, he says, do you know this guy, Fethullah Gulen? And I kind of pretend, I says, I said, I heard of him, but I thought he's very controversial. In that time, Nurettin Veren, I said, he wrote the book. He says, you know, Gulen is, you know, he has an agenda and he has this. He says, no, that guy, and so on. One of the things that they wouldn't deny that they have associate with Gulen. Okay. At the meantime, they will also try every way to spread his idea. So yes, I will not be surprised to they give his sermon to the free radio to disseminate his teaching, because again, because American thinks that he is a good, he is a peace compared to others, because he advocate education and so on. But I, as you says, I agree. They have a mutual interest. I don't know how long this marriage will continue, and we will see. But I think it's depend on who comes to the in Iran, and what's going to be in Iran. Because I do believe in Middle East there are two powers, and they're fighting for hegemonic and power in Middle East, Iran and Turkey.
And other question, and that makes a lot of sense, the question, and that is, with all the power he has in Turkey and his network, with the government pro-Gulen, why does Gulen still stay in the United States now that things are safe for him in Turkey? Why is he still here?
Well, the reason he is here, because in Turkey, well, they just changed the constitution, right? Then they haven't written constitution yet, but they changed it, right? They tried that yes vote, you know, the referendum, and that's why Gulen was even ordered his people from outside Turkey to go back to Turkey to vote for it. And Gulen even he says if I had the power, I would raise the dead people from dead to go vote for yes referendum. And finally, and Turkey did yes for change for referendum, which means change the militaristic the constitution, because that was the biggest block in Turkey against Gulen. And they called, because the national security in Turkey, they had the Red Book, which the Red Book really designed against the Gulen and all those movements. So, and that's why. And the second thing, Gulen is, again, he doesn't want to have a chaos, because he says if he go, it's not going to help. So still, he's still controversial. It's not really, not totally they have a power, but still there are some secular and still, you know, struggling. So, but, you know, and I've seen some people compare to Khomeini, and he will go back like this. I think Gulen is know this, and he know how to, that's what make him famous, is that he doesn't, you know, he seems like not like publicly. So Gulen will go secretly. I think he will go not like Khomeini, but I wrote the one, my article, it says First Class Revolution. One time I asked one of his followers, I said, you know, I mean, what's the ultimate, you know, how do you do? He says, I said, are you guys looking for like the Khomeini? He says, no, Khomeini did the second class or third class revolution. He said, we're going to do the first class. So the first class is what? You start with the grassroots. You put the people and put them in places. So that's how they did. And now in Turkey, they're, you know, most than they are supporting him. But still, Gulen doesn't want to create. But I do believe is soon enough after this election, I do believe Gulen probably will go back to Turkey.
And one last question, Dr. Mizell. We would love to have you back and have this entire show on Kurdish issues, and which is extremely important. It's another one of those topics that are consistently being censored from U.S. media here, and nobody wants to mention it because of the relations with the Turkey, et cetera. And we would love to have you back and concentrate on that front and that issue. But one last question on Gulen. And he's old. They're saying he's very sick. Who will be the new leader of the movement? when he dies? Who do you believe is going to replace him if he dies tomorrow?
Well, that's the really bigger question in there, because I don't. There are few people in the line, but they have like, you know, the closest his circle. There are some of them well respected within community, but that is kind of very. We will see if he passed away, like what Muhammad did when he died, and you see Islam is what? Islam is, you know, got problems and among themselves, the fighting and so on. So same thing when Bediüzzaman Said Nursi died, and they had all different view and so on. So and I suspect when he dies, and they will have same conflict in within the organization. But I will hesitate to say exactly who is going to come, because that guy is a very we don't know who is exactly going to be the, you know, replace.
Understood.
But
well, Dr. Mizell, I want to thank you for joining us. This is a fascinating story that more Americans need to know about. And for our listeners, we're not finished yet. Following, you're going to hear a conversation with Bill, the parent of a child who attended the Sonoran Science Academy in Tucson, so that you can get a sense of what these schools are like and how they operate and how that strikes an American parent. Dr. Aland Mizell, thank you for joining us today on The Boiling Frogs.
Many thanks.
Well, thank you, Peter and B. Collins. Thank you, Sibel, having your show.
Joining us now on The Boiling Frogs is Bill. Bill is the parent of a girl who attended one of the Gulen schools, a charter school called Sonoran Science Academy, in Tucson, Arizona. And to give you an overview, currently there are 119 Gulen charter schools in operation in the United States in 25 different states, and the Gulenists are actively proposing and founding new ones. There are 21 new schools proposed, and 40 others have been known to have been attempted but not yet opened their doors. And Bill, tell us a little bit about first, let me mention also that the schools, the charter schools that are operated by the Gulenists often have the name science in the title, like Sonoran Science Academy in Tucson. Here in the state of California, they operate the Magnolia Science Academy 1 through 5, the Magnolia Science Academy in San Carlos, which is just south of San Francisco, and many of their other schools include the word technology or math and science in the name of the school. And this will become important as we continue our discussion in a moment. But Bill, what first attracted you to the Sonoran Science Academy as a place to put your daughter in school?
Well, for me, what it was is that, you know, I mean, at the time I was working a good job, you know, there's been cutbacks. So, you know, and I had just bought a house, and Sonoran Science Academy happened to be in my neighborhood. It was actually walking distance for my daughter to go to school. And before that, I had her in a private Christian school. So with the cutbacks, I was trying to save money. And I had a friend who was an acquaintance who also worked at the school who suggested that I enroll my daughter there. And, you know, it was kind of a win-win situation. She had kind of mentioned that, you know, it also helps her. There's a little bit of a stipend for enrolling kids and, you know, things like that. But, so, you know, she said it's a small school, that it was kind of quirky and, you know, they're still kind of going through their things. I figured, well, it was a brand new school and they're just having growing pains just like any other new industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things that's concerning to me now is when I asked, I said, well, how did this all get started? And the answer was basic, you know, the generic answer. Well, it started by a couple of Turkish guys who went to college that saw that American kids need help with math and science. So they decided to open a charter school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it kind of gives you the feeling that it was unique, that it was the only one in the area, that there was nothing else like it. Come to find out, like you said, there's 122. So basically, it's a turnkey, to I look at it, they're like a turnkey franchise operation. And but when you ask the question, they want you to make you feel like it's unique, it's only exclusive to that area, and there's nothing else like it in the country.
Now, Bill, what were some of the first signs that gave you a sense that this wasn't what it was, purported to be? I understand that many of the teachers are Turkish and don't speak English very well, and that there are Turkish elements to the curriculum, that the Turkish language is taught and Turkish culture. There are contests that include winning a trip to either a Turkish event in the United States or to Turkey itself. So what was it that tipped you off that this was not just a new charter school that was focused on math and science?
Well, there's different things. I mean, my interaction with the Turkish staff, like emails and communications, like the emails, the grammar was really bad, a lot of misspellings. It was like, okay, I'm kind of, that kind of raised a red flag. My daughter and her friends even complained that sometimes they had trouble understanding the teachers.
I'd like to just interject here that I'm not critical of people who come to the United States and want to teach. I learned French from a Croatian woman, and she taught me very well, and she knew French well, she knew English well, and she hammered grammar into me in ways that were even, more precise than some of the American teachers who taught me a foreign language.
Well, I was going to lead up to that, and I was going to say, to be fair, I mean, I had an English teacher from South Africa, Mr. Brown, in the seventh grade, and he's probably one of my favorite teachers. So my thing to my daughter was, it's like, you know what, that doesn't mean anything. Why don't you try to warm up to your teacher a little bit more and try to, just be open-minded. And there's just a lot of things that, there was a few things that just kind of started getting annoyed. And one of them was an issue with her medical records, saying that she didn't have a shot, that it wasn't up to snuff. And it's like, I'm her father. I've got her documents right here. Unfortunately, I was in training out of town, so I couldn't go home and get the documents to show them. So I'm calling doctors, for the whole week, and, just to get that stuff faxed over. But it was almost to the point where it was almost, in my opinion, harassment, because they kept saying, if she doesn't get this shot, she's going to be kicked out of school. And finally, when I got home and I told them, listen, you know what, those records are up to snuff. You never seem to get the faxes. I've sent the fax like four times. And then it became an alleged oversight. And then when I took my daughter out of the school, I asked for her transcripts and her records, and I'm looking at the dates and the specific shot. It was like, there's no way those numbers could have been inverted. In fact, I think it was, how do you explain it? They were kind of like trying to manage her out, or they didn't want her at the school anymore. So I believe that was a kind of a tactic that they used.
Mm-hmm.
It's no secret that at that time, that between teachers and parents, that they do cream students out. If they're not performing, or if they're just not getting it, or if they just don't like them, they'll find ways to make the child not be there at the school.
And at what point did you start finding out about Fethullah Gulen, Imam Gulen's connection to these schools, and then the transparency level when you try to find out more about, what is this connection? Who is Gulen? How did you end up finding out about the Gulen connection?
When I pulled my daughter out and then I found out that a teacher had sexually harassed her, and my daughter had reported it to another teacher, and the school never told me about it, I was already not satisfied with the school, but I figured, well, I'll just leave it alone. It was a poor experience, but it was the sexual harassment that when I hit the roof, I had a conversation with my ex-wife, and then she told me about what had happened. So I contacted the school and saying, how come you never notified me about this? And so went back and forth with the principal, and then he threatened me with a lawsuit. And it's like, wait a minute, if they're hiding this, they have to be hiding a lot more. So I started doing more research on the school. I found out where Turkish teachers were locking kids in the closet. Sonoran Science Academy settled out of court $3,000 per student that was locked in the closet. So I just wanted to find out more on them. And I came across an article by Guy Rogers, Act for America, and that was the connection to Fethullah Gulen. And a couple weeks later, the Salt Lake Tribune had broke a story about Beehive Science Academy. And so there was, that's when I found out there's more than one school. I mean, there's, then it just started to unfold from there on.
Right, and I've been in touch with many, many teachers who used to work with these charter schools. And because they were Americans, they were kicked out, and the fact that the schools, charter school, schools issues, they issue visas, thousands of them, for teachers in Turkey to come and teach at these schools. And the discrepancy between the salaries given to these teachers coming on this special visa, who most of them don't even speak English, and yet the American teachers who are applying with the school, they are either not able to get the jobs, or the ones who are working there, they're kind of pushed out of their positions. And between hundreds, if not thousands, of parents and teachers who've been filing lawsuits against these schools, not a single one has been allowed to go through the court system, and that they get nervous and they settle all these lawsuits before even it makes it to the court, before the discovery. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, Mr. Karatas there had threatened me with a slap suit, and their attorney had written me a letter in which I did respond that trying to go after a single dad in this economy would be a real novelty to try to sue me in court for my bad experience with your school. And for every dime spent on fighting me in a courtroom would be, every dime not spent on students in the classroom. So this is taxpayers' money. Instead of being accountable, responsible, and honest, they would spend that taxpayers' money on out-of-court settlements instead of doing things right the first time out. And that, to me, is really concerning. Also, because they're so secretive, they will do anything and everything to avoid bad press. Well, every school has problems, but if you're not willing to work with the parents, if you're not willing to correct a problem, if you sweep it under the rug, that problem only gets bigger because, I don't know too many parents that are really enjoy surprises like that.
Well, let's talk about the secrecy. Now, it's like a maze because in one hand, they don't confirm when they are asked, okay, is it true? Because in foreign press, they actually proudly announced that Fethullah Gulen is the man behind all the schools, but yet here in the United States, when they are asked, they say nothing. They don't deny the connection, but they refuse to confirm the connection. So let's talk about this secrecy. What is this about?
Well, as you know, this is a taxpayer-sponsored program, the charter schools. It comes from us, the taxpayers, the property owners, state and federal taxpayers. So there is this thing called separation of church and state, and they don't want to get dinged on that. So, they may not be teaching Islam in school, but it is Gulen's form of Islam in its intention.
Well, then how do they get away with the local government? Because if they are not denying it, and then you have all this, both foreign press, making their way, in here in the U.S., and people reading about it. And, of course, these people who've been writing, there are so many activists. So what has been the position of these local governments and the federal government to this situation, this lack of transparency and for them not confirming who really is their basically boss with these schools.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up. Tom Horn, as you know, on a national level, you know, he's made headlines in CNN, newspapers, and going after public school teachers, like in TUSD and various other parts of the state, auditing teachers for their accents, and then telling them they can't teach because their accents, going after the ethnic studies there in Arizona, the Hispanic community. And he was questioned on this. Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star had written an article and actually questioned Tom Horn. And his answer was, I don't care if a school is aligned with a religious or political agenda, just as long as they give me results. And as it turns out, that various members, principals, board members, had donated to Tom Horn's campaign for state's attorney general. So one thing about these schools is that they do donate to, well, you know, they are private interest. So they do donate heavy to politicians. They invite politicians to dinners. They give them gifts. They invite them to the schools. So it's all about, you know, they get entrenched with local government, whether it's the mayor, the police chief, governor, congressman.
Right.
And so, you know, they do things to sway a decision or to look the other way when it just comes to the law. And in Arizona, a charter school is bound by the same laws as a public school, but yet nobody has challenged them.
A note to Peter here. Peter, you know that one of their darlings happens to be Representative Jan Schakowsky in Chicago, that they always have her to speak during their events, and there are a lot of trips they sponsor that they send, both from local governments and federal government and Congress. Trips to Turkey, you know, staying in expensive hotels and restaurants. But anyway, in Chicago, they have been very active with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky.
Well, and they have the Science Academy of Chicago, the Chicago Math and Science Academy Secondary School, and, Sibel, as we have covered in previous episodes of The Boiling Frogs, Chicago is a center for Turkish interests in the United States. Some of which is thought to be illegal in terms of money laundering, arms purchases, and other activities, including potential drug running.
Wow.
So, yeah, most of the financial operations, in terms of the financial center of these operations, they are all performed out of Chicago, and Chicago seems to be the city of choice, and it's been for a long, long time, and we're talking about dating back even for other related organizations under Gulen. Again, if you trace them, you will end up with most of these, like Niagara Foundation, you end up with Chicago.
Well, and that's interesting because Dr. Mizell does mention Niagara Foundation. It's based in Chicago. And, of course, Niagara Falls is between the U.S. and Canada in New York State. Why they chose Niagara and based it in Chicago is somebody's guess, but chances are it was not an American who made those choices. So Bill, as we wrap up here, what would you like our listeners to know about your experience with this charter school in Arizona that turned out to be part of the Gulen network?
Well, I just think it's really interesting that, you know, as I speak out about this, I have been threatened by teachers physically. I have been threatened, you know, by lawsuits. They've data mined my information to try to slander me or discredit me. Which really, in my opinion, I mean, you know, for example, there are like anti-Walmart people out there. You don't see Walmart throwing slap suits. You don't see Walmart threatening people physically or attacking the individual that doesn't like their business or trying to expose their business. It's a bullying tactic, and that should be enough to scare any parent away. But also, you know, looking at the political climb and this year with the Turkish Olympiads, 2011, is that in Turkey it is known that there's been a party there, this Kurdish group called the PKK, that has been bombing those schools. And, you know, they're upset because there's, you know, over 300 children under the age of 14 that have been in prison because, well, the Gulenists actually control the police. And, you know, because they have a difference of opinion there, so of course they're upset. In Turkey, they call you Ergenekon. Here, they call you Goose Network. So they attack the individual and not the idea or the argument.
And what is Goose Network?
What they call the Goose Network, they've actually created a website and have taken everybody's name, every journalist, every parent that stands up to them, and they call them a goose. They're part of this Goose Network.
Hmm.
And so they give you a label and then say that you're part of this group that's attacking us. In Turkey, they're called Ergenekon, or terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really McCarthy, and it's really draconian. But it's easier for them to give you a label, and then say that you're part of a group, than just concerned individuals talking about their experience.
Very interesting and chilling.
It is. It is.
Well, another tactic they've been using, Peter, and there are people that you and I both know in terms of reporters, when they see some reporter, American reporter, kind of getting close in terms of wanting to investigate or write editorial mm-hmm. pieces on them, the first thing they do before they go into the other mode is they try to buy that person off. And a few people that you and I know, one of these people is actually be interviewed here,
mm-hmm.
They paid for a lavish trip. They're like, you know what? We really want to show you that we are not the bad guys. So why don't we organize and pay for a trip for you to go to Turkey and stay in this mm-hmm. five-star hotel and wining and dining. They say you cannot drink alcohol in our dime because we don't, you know, we forbid alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can do it on your own. But we'll reimburse you for it, and then you can get to visit some of our schools and basically have both R&R and also journalistic experience. And for mm-hmm. some reason, they go there, they come back, and they're like, you know, they were so generous to me,
yep.
And they were so nice, and I don't have the heart really to criticize them after that. I mean, I have lost two journalists that I put on their track. They were both taken to Turkey, and they were dying their wine, and they had a beautiful vacation. They came back, and they are still suspicious of Killen, but they are saying they don't have the heart to go after him.
Wow.
It's really, really successful, and it's actually driving me crazy.
Well,
yeah, the television
I
reporter, Bo Berman in Texas, Dan Marys in Tucson, gave glowing reports, and that, oh, this is great, it's wonderful, these people are nice, they're tolerant, it's about, you know, love and harmony. It's just a fluff. It's just, and really, as a journalist, you know, it's like, aren't you supposed to be a certain way and objective? But, you know, they let the gifts and the food take over.
Well, I would just like to state two things for the record. If you're going to put me on the Goose website, be sure to spell my name right. It's Peter B. Collins. And I've been to Turkey once. I went as a tourist, and I paid for everything myself. I didn't buy a carpet in Istanbul.
Turkey also claims that they've captured 40 Al-Qaeda members. So now you've got, you know, three or four different groups that don't like the Gulenists, and they don't like America as well. I would be very careful on sending my child overseas for a contest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would just stand to reason. I mean, I would rather err on the side of safety than, oh, it's going to be okay.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you for joining us on the Boiling Frogs. Is there anything you'd like to add as we wrap up here?
Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, I like I said, I've been an advocate. I think that the taxpayers need to know where this is going. You know, pay close attention to the money trail. You know, there's just a lot of weird things going on with these schools, even in middle management. where they have, like, you know, for example, I graduated out of a school of 600, and we had a principal and two vice principals. These are schools that have, you know, from kindergarten to 12th grade, maybe 400 or 500 kids, but they got a principal, two vice principals, dean of academics, dean of discipline, dean of students, dean of, and these are all Turkish men with these phony titles.
Well, Bill, thank you for speaking up. Thank you for sharing your story with our listeners.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to cover these issues and try to draw attention to what's really going on here.
Joining us. We'll be back soon with more Boiling Frogs interviews.